Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
For the first time since 1971, less than half of Americans support the death penalty. That's according to a Pew poll released last week, which found that 49% support capital punishment, 42% are opposed. Back during the height of the Vietnam War, America had a whole different concept of criminal justice. In the days of the gas chamber, the firing squad, the gallows, and the electric chair, there was a deliberateness about executing criminals that, as the war ended, Americans generally and gradually turned away from. Frank Thompson was fighting for his life as a soldier in Vietnam back in the 70s. When he returned to civilian life, he joined the Oregon Department of Corrections, eventually becoming top prison official in the state. As superintendent of the Oregon State Penitentiary from 1994 to 1998, Frank oversaw the state's only two executions in the last 54 years. And that's all it took for Thompson to become a changed man regarding the power of the state to take a human life. Thompson now serves as an advocate against the death penalty. But surprisingly, Thompson said that when he took the prison job a long time ago, the last thing he ever expected was to feel any misgivings about killing murderers.
So when I became a superintendent of the Oregon State Penitentiary, the notion of having to take a life was nothing new to me. Training, knowing yourself under difficult and emergency situations and having to think rationally and logically and keep in focus protocol and procedures was not a new skill for me. So I went into it prepared to do, as many soldiers do as they volunteer for our military, prepared to do what we need to do in our profession. Well, within 18 months, I was assigned the job of executing someone, and I had to assist in rewriting the policies and the procedures from death by gas to death by lethal injections. And it forced me to come to grips with how I really stood about the death penalty. And all of the flaws with the death penalty, one by one, just came into focus, and I had to reckon with them. And I realized that I was leading a group of men and women into the process of how to kill a person, how to take the life of a human being in the name of a public policy that could not be shown to make the public any safer.
When you were doing that and you went home at night, did someone ask you, well, how was your day? And did it feel much different to answer that question when you were doing that versus a normal day at the Oregon State Pen?
I think only at home. We didn't talk about that side of my job. When they don't know what it is to walk inside of an institution every day and the doors locked behind you. And I wanted to protect my family, and it worked well. So I didn't get that at home. But on the job, now I tell you the point where the concern about each other's well-being sort of came to a peak. In the process of that first execution, I came to the realization that I was at my very core against the death penalty. And I don't supervise and guide people toward a goal, thinking one way and acting another. I have to be in concert. So I went to my staff and said, look, folks, I can't come to say that I support the death penalty. And I want you to know that. And I, under the law, the only person that was required to carry out the protocols of the death penalty was the superintendent. Everybody else volunteered, and I let them know that I would understand if someone opted not to go through with it. And I almost choke up at this moment when I think about to the person, because they believed in me, and they believed that a stable society needed professionals who could do the tough work. They stuck with me all the way through. And it was at that time we sort of took inventory of how each other were doing.
I guess when you became clear in your own mind and heart that you didn't support this, did you still witness that first execution? And if you did, then why did you proceed with a second?
It was my job. It was my job. But, you know, I'm not unique. Our firemen, our military persons, all over the spectrum of public service, you have men and women who undertake difficult, life-threatening jobs. But somehow or another, there's this mystique about us in corrections that really confuses me, even to this point.
No, I understand that, Frank, but if in your moral core it was wrong to you the first time, it must have been so difficult that second time.
It wasn't any easier, but I believe that any stable society has to have professionals that can do the difficult jobs, even if they don't believe in it, as long as they have the ability and the capacity to work to correct the system. I was a soldier in the Vietnam era. I didn't believe in the Vietnam War. And I demonstrated against the Vietnam War after I came out. So in a very similar sense, between the two executions, I went to my director. And I actually said to him, I can do my job as long as I have an ability to criticize. Knowing that the director was going to talk to the governor, and you know that's input. It takes an inside person to have that kind of a voice. That's one of the problems in this country is, I feel anyway, we too often have to make changes from without, in the street, from the outside force. But if you have the capacity to make change from within, from a credible experience, that's the way to make a real difference. And I think I've laid some fingerprints in that area here in Oregon that I'm very, very, very proud of.
So let's say you encounter someone who has also been in military service and has seen suicide bombers in Iraq and their friends and fellow soldiers killed and maimed from IEDs, and they also are in the penitentiary, and they also encounter someone who has committed a horrible crime, and they say to you, I am so enthusiastic about putting this person to death. How could you possibly argue against it? What would you say to them?
I would say to them, I can almost relate to your feelings because I had a best friend. His name is John Tillman Hussey, who was a police officer who was abducted by felons who were attempting to avoid being captured, and they killed him. And I can remember when I was supporting the death penalty, hoping that those persons would get caught and that they would be executed. So I would say to that person, I understand those emotions, but vengeance does not make good public policy. Capital punishment is a public policy that is supposed to have an outcome that protects the public and makes it safer holistically.
And capital punishment doesn't make the public safer?
Oh, absolutely not.
Is there something about the manner in which their lives were extinguished that you retain as a particular memory?
Yes. During the process of one of the executions, one of the individuals let us know that the straps binding his hands to the gurney was hurting his hands. And I gave instructions to make adjustments so that his hands wouldn't hurt. And the adjustments were made, and he looked at me and said, thank you, boss. I think that's a moment where the humanity of individuals involved in a terrible process speaks out.
Frank Thompson, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to get this message out.
Frank Thompson was the superintendent of the Oregon State Penitentiary from 1994 to 1998. To give some context to Frank's point on public safety, murder rates in non-death penalty states are consistently lower than those with the death penalty, 4.4 per 100,000 people versus 3.4 per 100,000 people. And a recent survey of criminologists by the University of Colorado found that 88% of criminologists believe that the death penalty does not act as a deterrent for future crimes.